welcome to the 20th episode of Scholarly Peers podcast. I'm your host, Simwang Chow. Today's episode is very, very special because it marks the end of the second season of the podcast, where I interview senior academics, journal editors about their experience and tips on journal peer review. And to mark the end of the second season, I'm very, very honored, very happy to have a very special guest, an expert in this area, I would say, Professor David Carlos from the University of Hong Kong. David, thank you very much for speaking with us here today. Okay. So, David, let's get started. But maybe, I know most people would know you, of course, but would you mind briefly introducing yourself, in particular, your experience in journal peer review?
Yes, thanks. So I'm David Carlos from the Faculty of Education, University of Hong Kong. I specialize in assessment in higher education, feedback in higher education, feedback literacy. I first started submitting to journals in the 1990s. My first publication came out in 1993. So I guess when you include research grants, I guess I've received probably between 200 and 300 peer reviews over the last 30 years. My three favorite journals are Studies in Higher Education, and Assessment and Evaluation in Higher Education. And I review for them quite regularly, and I think I've reviewed for them for at least 10 years now, and I've also been submitting to those three journals quite a lot. So that's basically a brief introduction.
Thank you. So let's start by talking about your peer review experiences. As you mentioned, you wear different hats. You are an author and also a very experienced peer reviewer as well. So let's focus on your identity as an author. Can you share with us some unforgettable peer review experiences? And I would leave it to you to interpret the word unforgettable.
Yes, I think what was important to me and quite memorable was achieving some early success. So in the 1990s, I guess the pressure to publish and to publish in higher impact journals was not so high. So I started realistically, not aiming too high. So my first publication was in like a local in-house journal. And then my first two submissions to international journals were both accepted. What, the first one in 1995, the second one came out in 1997. So I think that was quite important. And I think maybe that's a challenge nowadays with there's so much pressure and so many submissions to journals. But I think getting a little bit of confidence early in your career is quite important. So I think it's sensible not to aim too high too quickly. Publish one or two journal articles, maybe in local or regional or not the very top journals, and get those skills and confidence going, and then aim for higher impact or higher quality journals. And I suppose the other thing that is quite memorable was with peer reviews, there's always a kind of a mixture. Some of them are detailed, some of them are shorter, some of them are more supportive, some of them are harsher or more critical. But I think I received during the 1990s quite a lot of insightful reviews that will critique some of my weaknesses and make suggestions for tackling them. So generally, I adopt a relatively positive stance towards the reviewers. You know, reviewers are taking their time to read our work. They're not paid anything for it. They've got other things they need to do, such as their own work. So I think it's good to be generally appreciative of their comments. And even if they do make harsh or critical comments, there's something we can learn from it. I think sometimes people complain that the reviewer didn't understand what the writer was trying to do. And I think we have to take some responsibility for that. If the reviewer can't understand our key messages, well, maybe we didn't articulate them clearly enough. So I think whatever reviewers say, there are some things for us to learn about our research and our writing. And those would be some of my memorable experiences as an author.
Right, thank you. So let's put on another hat of yours as a peer reviewer. Any unforgettable or memorable experiences?
Yes, I'd like to share an experience where I was a peer reviewer and I thought the authors were treated in a suboptimal way. And I have a kind of proposition or a suggestion that I think sometimes executive editors don't take enough decisions themselves, and they push the onus of the decision making back to the reviewers. And I think sometimes, rather than sending back a resubmission to the reviewers, it might be good if the editor, executive editor, made the decision themselves, because I think that's fairer to the reviewers and it speeds up the process. But let me elaborate on the experience I felt was somewhat problematic. So there were two reviewers. I was one reviewer. I was generally positive about the paper. I gave a few suggestions. And the other reviewer was a little bit more critical than me and had a few suggestions. The authors, in my opinion, did a good job of revising the paper. They didn't follow word for word all the reviewer's suggestions. They took up some of them and they didn't took up others, but they did other things, and I think they improved the quality of the paper. They filled in the standard response to reviews, and they said they've followed the reviews sometimes and they haven't followed the reviews for other aspects, but they gave their rationale as to why they thought they were strengthening the paper without necessarily following word for word what the reviewers said. Now, to me, that is relatively good practice. To me, the important thing is to improve the paper. I think that's even more important than just following unreflectively what the reviewers have said. So the executive editor sent it back to the two peer reviewers, one of which was me, and I felt that there was sufficient merit in the paper for it to be accepted. But in both occasions, the other peer reviewer seemed unhappy, not really with the quality of the paper, but the other peer reviewer seemed unhappy that their suggestions weren't followed 100%. So in my opinion, the ego of the peer reviewer was engaged. You know, I guess as a peer reviewer, we like it if the writer appreciates our comments, but I don't think we should get too involved in it emotionally. And if the author says, well, I haven't followed your suggestions for these reasons, I think it's okay. So in my opinion, this paper should have been accepted. And I had a feeling that both times the peer reviewer got a little bit emotional about their brilliant suggestions not being followed. And eventually both of these papers were rejected. But about 3 months later, they came out in another journal and I was able to see the names of the authors, and both of these papers were excellent. Both of the authors were excellent. In my opinion, the executive editor could have intervened and could have made a different decision. And overall, I would prefer executive editors to make a decision on the basis of the response to the peer reviews and the understanding of the situation, because they have other reasons for not always thinking that going back to the original peer reviewers is a good strategy. to me, it can be quite time-wasting. I mean, we've waited a long time for the reviews. We've got the reviews. We've spent a number of weeks revising it. We've resubmitted. So then to go into a review process that can take another 3 or 4 weeks or even sometimes longer, I don't feel is fully necessary. Then as a peer reviewer, I mean, I've given up my time. I've made my comments. I've submitted the comments the first time. I think it's a little bit of an imposition to ask me to review the paper a second time. When I don't really feel that's my job, I feel that's the job of the executive editor. Now, I know the executive editor will say, I'm not an expert in the field. But I think if they are experienced and knowledge enough to be an executive editor, I think they can sometimes make the decision. But if they don't want to make the decision, I think there is also a fallback option where they could write to the original reviewers and say, in my judgment, the writer has done a good job in addressing the reviews and revising the paper. I'm inclined to accept the paper. If I haven't received word to the contrary within 7 days of this procedure, then I'm going to accept the paper. Because I think that would protect the executive editor from a very motivated and very determined peer reviewer who would like to have a second go. But I'm not convinced that many peer reviewers really want to have a second go. So I think under some circumstances, now, if there is still quite a lot of doubt about the quality of the revisions, then sure, go back to the original peer reviewer. That would be what I'd like to share on that, because I don't usually complain too much about my own experiences of peer review. You know, whether it's accepted or rejected, that's part of the game. But I did at once have an occasion where I'd had two peer reviews. And I did everything that the two peer reviews had asked for. Plus, I did more. I did updating. I did polishing. And I was fairly optimistic it would be accepted. The executive editor did the strategy of going back to the two original peer reviewers. But unfortunately, they were not available. So it then went out to a new and different peer reviewer. And fair enough, that peer reviewer didn't particularly appreciate my paper. And this person suggested rejection, and the paper was rejected. But I kind of feel that when you're resubmitting, you should be judged on how you've met the original reviews. So to me, this was an additional, slightly problematic aspect of always going back to the peer reviewers, or additional peer reviewers, when sometimes I think the editor or the executive editor should have the seniority, the expertise, the broad knowledge to make a decision themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes we think a lot about peer reviewers and what they have to do, but I think we rarely think about the role of editors. I think, you know, the editors are supposed to be autonomous enough to make a decisive kind of endpoint to the peer review process if necessary. So thanks, David. So going back to what you said earlier about your first few submissions and the rather successful and positive experience, how did you learn to navigate the peer review process at the outset? Did you do it with your supervisor or with senior colleagues? How do you get started with submitting to journals?
I think it's important to talk with other scholars about their experience. So as a young researcher, I think tapping into the experience and wisdom and expertise of more senior scholars. So I do remember talking to a number of colleagues and other scholars about the processes, the procedures, the successes, the failures, the reasons why manuscripts often get rejected. I did a little bit of that, but I think I learned quite a lot from experience that once you've submitted a few times to journals, you get a kind of a sense of the kind of strengths and weaknesses of your own work. And then you get a sense of the kind of things the reviewers often ask about and the kind of things they're looking for. One thing I did at the outset, and I nearly always do this, is before I submit to the journal, I ask a friend or a colleague or a collaborator or somebody I know to take a critical look at my manuscript before it's submitted. And I find I even sometimes ask my doctoral students, and I find they can give interesting insights as well. I think we can learn from a lot of different people, whether they are more senior than us, more junior. They will all see different things, and we all have certain blind spots in our own work. So I think it's important to get plenty of peer review before the submission, at least one person, if not two. Sometimes you can ask people to look at different aspects according to their expertise. You can get a methodologist to look at the methodology, somebody who's in the substantive area to comment on other issues. So I think those are some of the things, learning from experience and talking with other scholars.
Yeah, I think it's important to have critical friends. And I really like what you said about learning from both more senior and junior colleagues, because when you think about peer reviewers, your paper may get reviewed by a more junior colleague. So, you know, it's good to get different perspectives as well. So even though you mentioned the outset experience was quite smooth, were there any challenges, or do you still face challenges now when it comes to peer review?
Yeah, always lots of challenges and lots of rejections. So rejections are normal. You know, these days the journals that you or I might be submitting to might only accept 10%, 15% of the submission. So we're all going to receive a lot of rejections. So I think we need to normalize rejection. I think in the 1990s, and still to a certain extent now, the waiting is a long time, and it's something you have to get used to. I mean, it used to take even longer than it does now, because we used to have to use postal mail, and there were all sorts of unreliabilities in the system. So that's one thing. You have to kind of be patient and get on with some other work, and that can be difficult when you're an early career researcher, because you need publications to come out to get your first job. Then I suppose another challenge I have is, because I do qualitative research, and then not all reviewers were going to appreciate or understand qualitative research. And, you know, you've got certain challenges of how to present the data, how to try to answer the so what question, how to use theory, how to balance evidence and arguments. And then I suppose a challenge for most researchers and most folks submitting to journals is developing a kind of emotional equilibrium, and kind of like the affective dimension of feedback literacy, you know, being able to enjoy success, but to pick yourself up from rejections. I mean, I obviously get a lot of rejections. I've had a lot of papers rejected over the years. And very often I find a paper needs a little bit more revision and polishing. It needs a bit more critical external review. And a lot of my best articles were accepted by the second journal I submitted to. I think I have a reasonable record where quite a few got accepted by the first journal, quite a few got accepted by the second journal, and sometimes I had to go to a third journal, but not too often. I think I had two papers in my career that got rejected by three journals, and I think after that I felt probably that's enough and I should maybe move on and do something else. I think if you're getting rejected by journal after journal after journal, I think folks need to maybe reflect critically. But getting rejected by one journal and going to a second journal, I think that's absolutely fine and absolutely normal. And I think it's learning to appreciate critical feedback and to keep polishing the paper and polishing our academic writing. And I get some satisfaction that after a period of weeks or months, I can kind of see this paper now is 10 or 15% better than it was a few weeks ago, a few months ago. And I think it's important to develop the kind of self-editing and refining and developing the significance, using theory skillfully, trying to add something original to the knowledge base. Yeah, those would be some of the key issues, I think.
I think a lot of people will be interested to know, in terms of dealing with rejections, do you get better at handling that with more, or it still stings and it still hurts? And what's your experience, David?
Yes, I think you're right. I think that it does get a bit easier over time, because once you've been doing it for, say, 30 years, you've had the full range of experiences. And yeah, I still really enjoy the successes, and I really enjoy it when my papers finally come out, and I like to see them in print, and that still gives me a kind of feeling of excitement. I'm looking forward to the paper coming out, things like that. But I think now, when I get the paper rejected, I just think, well, fine, now I've got to revise it. What can I learn from the reviewers that will make it better? What should be the next journal? Yeah, I think now it doesn't sting too much. Maybe research grants sting a little bit more, because usually with a research grant, you have to wait a long time. Sometimes it's an annual exercise. So if you miss out narrowly 1 year, you've got to wait for a whole year. Well, with a journal article, if you work hard on it, you might be able to resubmit it within, say, 2 or 3 weeks after a rejection. Not too quickly. You need to, I think, feel that it's a lot better before it goes into the next journal. But at least you've got the opportunity to revise and resubmit under your own time frame. While with research grants, you generally, in my experience, have to wait for 1 year before you can do it again. So I think that's even tougher than being rejected by a journal.
Thanks. All right, the last two questions focus on early career researchers. As most of our listeners are relatively junior in terms of research. So my first question, David, is what do you think can be done to support early career researchers or doctoral students in the peer review process?
Yeah, what can early career researchers do to prepare themselves? I think there are several things. I think one thing is to familiarize yourself very well with one or two or three key target journals in your area. So imagine you're preparing a manuscript and you're thinking of submitting it to journal X. I think get a thorough understanding of the kind of papers that journal X publishes, the kind of debates that are prominent, the kind of key authors, and try to get a good understanding of that journal. I think that's important. Secondly, I think co-authoring with doctoral supervisors is a very good strategy, assuming your doctoral supervisor is willing to do that. Because I think that's a kind of an extension of the supervisor-doctoral student relationship. And I think you've got the interpersonal relationship. Hopefully, if you've got a good interpersonal relationship with that person, you've got a level of trust that can facilitate. And I think having your doctoral supervisor to work alongside you in your first submissions can be very helpful. This never happened to me because my doctoral student was in England, I was in Hong Kong, she was in somewhat different areas, so we didn't co-author, but I think if we had have done, it would have been very beneficial. And I regret now I didn't try to persuade her more to co-author with me, because I think that would have helped a lot. After my early successes in the 90s, I mean, trying to publish from my doctorate, I had quite a few rejections and quite a few struggles. And I think having a doctoral supervisor alongside me would have accelerated that process. I think it's important to hone your writing skills and be reflective and try to train yourself in improving and polishing your writing, in realizing what you're good in doing in your writing and what you're less good in doing. And I think it's important and sometimes neglected to do different kinds of writing. For example, writing for newsletters or writing newspaper articles, writing blogs. I think it's important, different kinds of writing, because it hones your writing skills. I can remember early in my career, I used to write maybe one newspaper article per year. And I think you learn about writing and you learn about yourself as a writer and you learn different styles. I don't go as far as writing poetry or novels, but I know one or two people do that. But I think learning different genres of academic writing can be useful. And, you know, I quite like Twitter, you know, to actually try and say something meaningful in 15 to 20 words, I think it's quite a skill. So I think learning how to write different length for different purposes, I think is quite important. So I think developing your confidence as a writer, developing your skills as a writer, I think very important. And maybe part of developing that skill is to learn from other experts. So I can remember identifying one or two favorite writers in my areas and then trying to understand and appreciate how they craft an article and what kind of phrases they use, what kind of moves they do in different sections. So I sometimes talk about like a double reading. You know, normally when we read an article, we're looking for the content, the ideas. But I think there's also a second reading when you try to appreciate the rhetorical strategies, the discourse moves, even the little phrases. I sometimes used to look for little neat phrases that I could incorporate in my own writing. So learning from the experts, learning from good writers, I think is another important strategy for early career scholars.
Yeah, I think looking at those articles as exemplars, right, and then looking for identifying not just the content bits, but also the kind of linguistic features. I really like that double reading idea, David. So you talked quite a lot about how to get involved in kind of publishing, but do you think that doctoral students or early career researchers should be encouraged to become a peer reviewer for journals? And if so, how do they get involved in that system?
I think it's probably better to publish some articles first, get some experience of writing before you become a peer reviewer. But I suppose in addition, you could be a peer reviewer for a local conference, and we have a conference for doctoral students, and the doctoral students can be involved in the peer review at that level first. But usually I think what happens is you publish a few articles in journals, and then it's quite common, I think, that journal will then later ask you to review some papers. So I think that's quite a good way of getting an introduction. And I think these days journals find it difficult to find sufficient peer reviewers, so it may be they're broadening the net. But generally, I think start by publishing a few articles, and then later when you're asked to peer review for a journal, seize the opportunity, spend some time trying to produce a thoughtful and useful peer review, and then continue learning from the process, and maybe even discuss peer review with one of your senior colleagues so you can understand how they write a peer review. Because I guess learning how to be a good peer reviewer is something we need to learn in addition to learning how to be a good author.
Right, thanks. All right, my final question, David. You mentioned, of course, you gave some advice to ECRs earlier, but I mean, thinking about the situation or the scenario where doctoral students or early career researchers are thinking about submitting their first ever manuscript to a journal. And I've had these queries from students about when is it ready? When do I feel like I'm ready to submit? Is there an indication? So what would you say to those students or ECRs?
Firstly, I would encourage realistic journal selection. I think sometimes early career and doctoral researchers aim too high too quickly. And I can understand why they do that. Sometimes they're under pressure to have a certain number of SSCI publications. But I think you need to start realistically, and probably for your first submission, if you aim for the very best journals in your field, that may be impossible. So realistic journal selection for a journal you understand well. Secondly, I think it's important to get critical peer review from a supervisor or a collaborator or a friend or a colleague before you submit. I think critical is important. I try not to always ask the same friends or collaborators to look at my manuscripts because I think that would be too much of a burden for them. So I try to ask different people according to the manuscript. And 10, 15 years ago, I asked somebody to give some critical peer review on my manuscript. And he wrote back and said, David, your writing is very good. Your work is very good. I'm sure this article will be accepted. Now, to me, that was quite frustrating because they gave me nothing to work with. So what I do now is I sometimes say to my potential peer reviewer before I submit, please be as harsh as you can. And sometimes I say, the editor has instructed you to reject this journal. If you had to reject it, what would you say? Or what would be the worst thing you could say about this manuscript so that I really get some critical feedback? And then I think this hypothetical doctoral student you're referring to could actually say to a critical peer reviewer, do you think this manuscript is nearly ready to submit, or do you think it needs another couple of months' work on it? Because my third recommendation would be to avoid premature submission. As an experienced peer reviewer, I often form an opinion that the manuscript I'm reviewing needed quite a bit more work done on it. I'm feeling that rather often, that another 2 or 3 weeks of hard work or a month of sporadic work, but that it really needed a bit more done to it. So given that reviewers are hard-pressed, reviewers are busy, reviewers want to feel that the writer has crafted the work as much as they possibly can and has answered all the questions that a reasonable reviewer might ask. Is it a rigorous research method? Does it have a conceptual framework that is well-founded on existing literature? Are the findings well-presented in a suitable format? Does the discussion extend the framework and the literature review? Has the significance, the theoretical and practical significance, been clearly articulated? Is there some originality? Why should we publish this work? You know, I think there is a lot that needs to be done. It's not, hey, this is my latest article and my favorite topic. You know, they've got to, I think, create a strong argument and rationale for why this paper merits a place in the journal rather than any of the other submissions. So in my opinion, a lot of authors could do with polishing the manuscript for a couple more weeks before submission. One of the things I've been noticing recently, I find authors often do not cite very accurately previous authors on that topic. They're kind of on the right track. Well, Carlis 2017 said something like this, and particularly because my work on feedback literacy is getting quite heavily cited, I'm often given manuscripts where they're citing my work, and I don't feel they've cited it particularly accurately. I think sometimes before you submit the paper, you need to read through some of the key literature you've cited one more time. Try and get some inspiration from it, because I think that can often seed your discussion and significance. But I think also be very careful that what you say these authors have said, they actually have really said it. I think sometimes early in the drafting process, people sort of rely on their memory of what somebody said, and they think, because you don't want to interrupt the flow of your writing by keep going and checking sources all the time. But at a certain point in the manuscript, one of the authors, presumably the first author, needs to check quite carefully that the citations are accurate. I'm noticing that quite often, not only for my own work, but for other feedback research when I know the source very well, that what the early career academic says the author said and what they actually said is not 100% true. It's largely accurate, or it sometimes misrepresents or exaggerates what they say. Sometimes the nuance is slightly missing. They sometimes overclaim significance, or they overclaim what another author said. So I think this polishing and refining and checking is important before you submit. So when I think my manuscript is 100% ready for submission, I usually just wait 2 or 3 days, and I sometimes think through a few things. And usually I get another idea, and then I work on it for a few more hours. I don't mean this process should go on for months, maximum 2 or 3 weeks. But I think actually this can save you time in the long run, because it maximizes your chances of getting accepted by the first journal you submit to. To me, what is time-consuming and a waste of time is having to go to a second or a third journal on many, many occasions. I think we should be aiming to get accepted by the first journal we submit to at least 30 or 40% of the time. And I think this additional polishing, maybe additional peer review, another Zoom discussion with your co-author just to check everything, I think these kind of things are really worth doing. And I think the peer reviewer really appreciates that. Even when peer reviewers don't like my work or they don't like my methodology, they normally say, well, I appreciate the way the author has polished this manuscript. It's well written, it's well polished. They can see a lot of effort has gone into it. And I think that's important. I think if the peer reviewer can see that you really put in a maximum amount of effort over an extended period of time, I think they're going to give you a more positive peer review. And I think peer reviewers do get a bit frustrated when they think the author was a bit casual, it's a premature submission, they haven't done some of the things that should have been done. And then I think sometimes if they are a bit harsh and critical, then I think the author has to take some responsibility for that. Maybe one final point on harsh and critical peer review. I think this can be positive, because in our lives, we often get feedback from our friends, our colleagues, and our collaborators. And I think by definition, they will be a little bit more positive than the reality. And I think sometimes when you're getting praise from a colleague, you wonder whether it really is justified. Now, I think with anonymous peer review, if they give you praise, I think you can be certain it's well-deserved. And if they give you harsh, critical, upsetting kind of comments, then I still think there's something you can learn from that. Why did that reviewer get annoyed? And is it because the manuscript was pedestrian, or needed more work done to it, or needed more significance, that so what question? So I personally think we need to be quite thick-skinned, but quite open-minded. And if we did elicit harsh feedback on our manuscript, why was it? Was it because there wasn't enough freshness or originality or rigor? And I think we can learn a lot from harsh peer review, and I think we need to develop the emotional equilibrium to do that. But I do appreciate maybe that's not easy for a young researcher. And I guess for your very first submission, if you got a harsh feedback, that can be upsetting. But it does make me wonder whether the journal was too high a ranking for your current capacity. I mean, I think don't submit to the very best journals unless you have a really strong manuscript and unless a objective critical friend has said to you, yes, this really is a strong manuscript. Your methodology was excellent. The significance is all there. Feel free to go for a really top journal.
Thanks, David. I think that's so inspiring. I think I that make me think a lot about my own practices, my own experiences as well. Often we're thinking about like churning out papers after papers after papers. We kind of get lost into that mindset. I mean, crafting your manuscripts, getting it ready before it's reviewed. Because as you said, people are taking their time to review your manuscript. You better not send them something that's not ready. So a lot to think about. But I think your message really to ECRs and doctoral researchers is really this, that submission takes time. Preparing a manuscript takes time. So there shouldn't be any rush to it, and set a manageable goal and also a reasonable goal as a target journal, for example. So thank you very much, David. A lot to think about for me personally, and I'm sure for our audience as well. Thank you for taking the time. So this marks the end of the second season of the podcast. In the third season, we're trying to do something slightly different. Instead of having predetermined questions, we will be inviting questions from people on Twitter for a specific scholar that we'll be interviewing. So stay tuned if you're interested in learning more about peer review. But thank you again, David, for your time.
Thank you.